intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
Welcome, PC Invasion Podcast fans, to the PC Invasion Podcast. Even if you're not a fan of the PC Invasion Podcast, you're free to listen too. But, you know, if you don't like it, I don't know why you are doing so. What a terrible introduction. Hello, Tim McDonald.
Hello, Peter. Peter, what you should have said is that if they're not a fan, they will be by the end of this.
Oh, nice. If I was better at editing, I would cleverly sneak that in instead of my rambling nonsense.
I don't think it's a question of better at editing. I think it's a question of actually could be asked to do it.
Well, yeah, it's that and like the, I don't know, the tone and the inflection would be all wrong if I just subbed in your bit there. Anyway, we're back like just 1 week after the last one. That's impressive, oh, isn't it?
Holy shit.
Yeah, isn't that good? More PC things to talk about.
I should fucking well hope so.
Yeah, indeed.
What this is.
Did you see anything, Tim, about Michael Pachter being fitted up by the Daily Star with an unfortunate no. PC quote?
I didn't. Do tell. For what it's worth, I want to point out, I actually did not see this. That wasn't sort of the usual.
No.
Why no, Peter? I don't know what
please,
that is. Why don't
tell
you explain?
Me more. I mean, I don't normally go out of my way to talk about Michael Pachter because, you know.
I don't normally go out of my way to talk about the Mirror or read the Mirror.
No, the Star, Tim, the Star.
Oh, God, that's as bad.
Confusing
that's potentially
your,
worse.
You're confusing your pathetic British tabloids there. No, well, it was this quote he gave to them about PC gamers where he said they were racists. All right, I'm just going to read you the quote as is from the Daily Star first. I think PC gamers are like racists. They only like their own kind. Their, spelled incorrectly, by the way. They only like their own kind, and they have no interest in venturing out and mixing with other races. PC gamers are arrogant twits who are convinced what they do is better than than what anybody else can possibly do. Now, that's not a great quote, obviously.
Not really.
It's kind of a funny one. Then he came back and said, firstly, I've never used the word twit in my life, so I don't know where they got that from. But that, to me, just makes me think he said something worse. He probably said they were arrogant. We were arrogant twats. That's what I think.
Possible.
He says he did use the term racist, but only upon being questioned repeatedly about what I meant when I said PC gamers were insular. So, there we go.
That sounds like The Star, The Mirror, The Daily Mail, basically any of the awful rags. The Sun.
It kind of sounds like they just kept asking him, like, can you say something a bit more controversial, though? Can you not have something a bit more?
Anyway, tabloid journalism, everybody.
Do you reckon we're like racists, Tim? I don't. Well, some of my best friends are PlayStation 4s.
I don't think that we're like racists, but he would say that, wouldn't he? Because he's a console fucking twat.
Hey! See what he did there? Yeah.
Well.
I know what point he was fishing for and
yes.
What the Daily Star have kind of blindly twisted, but
yes.
I don't know. I kind of feel like that goes for every person who foolishly defends their system to the death. Like,
yes.
Yeah, anyone who does that is kind of an idiot.
Yes.
Really.
I mean, it isn't much the same true of, for instance, Xbox fans, Sony fans. They
yeah.
are fairly convinced that their system is the best and the other ones are the rubbish ones, and that actually
yeah.
you don't need more than 30 frames a second because you can't
right.
see faster than that anyway.
And their arguments, just instead of going like, ours are obviously, yeah, but better resolutions and graphic fidelity and frame rates and stuff. And they just go, yeah, but my box cost like $300. So there you go. Which is a fair point.
It's more that gamers in general, if humans really are tribal creatures,
pretty much. We're bad at that.
But he just singled out PC gamers because, you know, we're the ones who are objectively right.
Obviously, yes.
Hey, we've got the higher resolutions, the higher frame rates, shit ports.
People would probably realise it if there were like less of the other people out there. I mean, maybe we could like put them in some kind of a camp or something. I'm not sure. And just like keep them out of the public eye. I'm just saying so that mostly it would be the PC people who are being heard. Because
build a wall.
or build a wall, yeah. Just around all of the console people.
We'll make them pay for it.
We're not doing ourselves any favours here.
No, people are actually going to take this seriously, aren't they? Look, when we say this shit, it's usually with some measure of irony. Peter and I both have PlayStation 4s as well as various other systems.
I know for a fact that you've got more stuff as well. Do you have like a 3DS or something, probably?
I've got fucking everything, basically.
The PC games. And a PlayStation 4 for me at the moment. I would have more if I had more money, you know. It's just how it is.
I just like games. I like playing games. I try to play as many games as possible. That means playing games on many different systems.
Like you're protesting too much.
Does it? Some of my best friends play console games.
Exactly. Yes. Quite. Anyway, that was just something I saw before recording this. Thought I'd mention it. It was I didn't want to write a news story on it because Michael Pachter embarrasses self again. Isn't really much of a news story.
Yeah,
and it kind of seems like this wasn't entirely his fault. So
no, this honestly, if I'd read that even without him making a statement, my opinion probably would have been, oh, they've done some fishing and adjusted the quote out of context here slightly, haven't they?
It was quite funny. Originally, the NeoGAF thread was just called, in quotes, PC gamers are like racists. And I clicked on it and saw it was Michael Pachter, laughed and closed the thread, moved on with my life.
Well, you know, he gets loads of money from EA and so on. They don't like the PCs. You know, we are obviously, you know, the games industry is against us. We're being marginalised.
Absolutely.
Right, let's stop before we dig this any deeper.
It's reverse racism against the PC, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Why isn't there a PC Pride game? Day, Tim. Oh, I messed up. I messed up my comedy parody of a racist person trying to be less racist. We definitely need to move on. Right. Let's move on to Digital Homicide, because that's also quite a funny story.
Yes.
I know you enjoyed this one as well. Where to start with this? I suppose we should go...
We should explain that Digital Homicide are the digital equivalent of that guy in a back alley who's selling kebabs that look ridiculously off, and you're a bit worried about them, but they are really cheap. And then you risk one, and you are horrifically ill.
And he has loads of them as well. Loads of different varieties that he seems to produce really quickly. Which is also a little bit suspicious, to be quite honest, because you're wondering how he gets that meat supply so readily. But
occasionally you wander back into that alley and you think, well, he's got this different kind. That actually looks more my sort of thing, and maybe it won't be so bad this time. And you eat it, and you're horribly sick. That's Indeed. Digital Homicide in a very long-winded analogy.
Yes. And in this analogy, presenter and video games coverage person Jim Sterling is sort of like the health inspector, because he went into the back alley quite a while ago and he started checking out these kebabs and doing videos about them and going, I don't think these kebabs are very good. I don't think people should eat these. They're bad kebabs. I'm warning you, everyone, stay away from the kebabs.
I'd say he's more a food critic, and Valve are the health inspectors.
Well, yeah. Okay,
they're the health board.
All right, so he's the food critic, okay. So the man in the back alley, Digital Homicide, he's not happy about this, about Jim Sterling's food criticism. So he decides to sue the food critic for initially $10 million. Which, I mean, that seems reasonable, don't you think, Tim? $10 million for saying the game is bad.
Lost revenue and all that, because clearly those games would have made $10 million otherwise.
Absolutely. That's actually now $15 million, apparently. Oh, well. the case has been updated.
That seems more reasonable.
Yeah. They redid their sums and they figured out, actually, no, 15 is better.
Well, that's because it's been a bit longer now, so that's more lost sales.
Yeah, even more. Right, it's been probably almost a year or so, certainly 6 months. Yeah, definitely. But not content with suing the food critic, they more recently, a few days ago, attempted to sue other kebab customers. I like this analogy. I'm sticking with it.
I think we've gone way too far with this analogy, to be perfectly honest.
They tried to sue Steam users now. Steam users who had left negative reviews and comments and stuff.
I have a question and a clarification. Did they try to sue them, or did they subpoena Valve for the names and addresses so that they could initiate some sort of...
That is a possibility. The way it was initially reported was that both things had happened. They had subpoenaed Valve for user information and had also filed a personal injury suit against... whether that's on hold until they can get the information, or I don't know. Supposedly the personal injury one was for $8 million in this case. I don't know if that's per Steam user or if that's going to be shared between them, or, you know, maybe that's 800,000 each. If that is
the other point of this is that they weren't just trying to sort of sue everyone who'd left a negative review about their bad games. Shit. That's me in for $8 million.
They had specifically chosen 100 people, yeah.
They had specifically chosen the sort of people who were saying that they should have to watch their families die because their games are so bad.
Yes. Which is not a good thing to be saying. Let's be clear about that.
I am rather sympathetic towards them. I have seen some of the utter bullshit that games developers have to put up with, and it is fucking ridiculous.
Absolutely. I think maybe the way to go about that, though, is probably not to try to sue people on Steam. I think that's maybe a poor solution to that dilemma.
No, but I can kind of, again, I can sort of understand their frustration, considering they spent a while trying to get Valve to actually moderate these users and stop them writing horrific death threat reviews, which apparently they didn't.
I am sympathetic to that argument, but I do kind of suspect they're making it in bad faith, in that this is the best light they can portray their lawsuit in, they are doing so.
Quite probably.
Also, they can moderate their own forums themselves if they want to, as developers. I realise that's a bit tricky when you have about 500 games that you've released in the span of 3 months, but they do have those moderation tools at their disposal to some extent. I don't know how much that covers, like, people privately messaging them if they somehow know their username on Steam or what have you.
I'd imagine that if they ever respond to anything or write anything in those threads, they are listed as developer, so their name is listed there. Yeah. But yeah.
You'll get no argument from me that Steam's moderation is piss poor.
Steam's moderation is fucking awful. It's just kind of nice to know that they're like this with companies and not just with the general public.
Yeah.
I say nice, but, you know, it's obviously not good, but I'm sort of heartened to know that it's not just us lot who are being shat on.
Yeah, that if you're an actual... I mean, I don't know.
I assume they're probably all right with, like, EA, Activision.
I was going to say, like, if you're Bethesda and you make a report about someone, maybe things happen a bit more quickly. But anyway, in response to being... Valve didn't respond too favorably to being subpoenaed for user information, so they removed all of Digital Homicide's games from Steam. They're still there in the usual sense that if you bought one previously, it's, you know, you don't have it removed from your account or anything like that. But they're delisted, I guess.
They are no longer available for sale.
Yes.
They are no longer visible on the website. If it's in your account, you can install it, you can play it, you can do whatever you like.
Yeah.
But you cannot purchase them.
Yeah. There we go. They're in the digital homicide story. It doesn't end because I believe as part of their statement where they said, well, we think Steam is supporting harassment now, which isn't quite true. I think Steam is supporting don't subpoena us for user information primarily. It's a little bit disingenuous to say we love developers having shit thrown at them. Because I don't know. I don't think they do. I just think they're bad at moderating it.
I just think they're
not prepared to... Well, they don't have enough... They couldn't possibly hire enough people to deal with it in a one-to-one manner. So, I mean, I guess that's the question. How would you improve Steam's moderation? Do anything with it other than it is now, I suppose?
Pretty much. Remove all of the community stuff.
Just remove the community hubs.
Yeah. Get rid of the forums,
that
the user
does solve
reviews.
The problem.
It does solve the problem.
In one way.
I suspect it would raise the general IQ of Steam by quite a margin.
Yeah, but occasionally they're really useful because you can go in there and you can find the one guy who's put together the resolution mod fix for that obscure game and go, oh, great, thanks, that guy.
This is true, although the thing is that you know, all of this stuff will inevitably move over to other forums. It's just that
it wouldn't be as immediately
accessible. It wouldn't be like walking into a brick and mortar store and there's some guy standing there going, this is shit, don't buy it.
Not just one guy, about 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kill their families.
I hope you all die and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, this is just a it's idiot ping pong in a sense.
Mm.
Like I can't see anyone in this in a good light.
Well, I'm fine with the people who just go digital homicide, your games are bad.
Yes.
I don't think Jim Sterling did anything wrong by playing the bad games and saying they were bad games, for example.
No, I don't think so either. I will concede I haven't watched any of his videos or read any of the bits he's written about this.
You know.
I don't know. Has he been factually inaccurate? I doubt it, but
I'm sure if you combed through every single digital homicide video he's done, you would find at least one inaccuracy, because that's just how things are. But
yeah, I know, but that's not quite what I mean.
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
All he did was play the games. He did, you know, there was no fancy editing going on. I mean, these are all just like, I think they're all possibly Unity games that just use default assets.
Yeah.
And then basically they release a sequel to the game and it's basically the same, but one of the assets has been switched with another one. And it's, yeah, like if you think you've bought and played a bad game recently, there's a whole other world out there of like Steam greenlit titles. You know, if you're wondering why most games on sites, aside from review score inflation, which is a thing, if you're wondering why most games generally get reasonably good scores, it's because people just don't play the utter shit. Like, there is a whole world, or rather, they don't do full reviews of utter shit. There's a gigantic cesspool out there.
We rarely do simply because if a game turns out to be utter shit, unless it's something really major, we're probably not going to waste our time on it. We would rather tell you about a good game that you can play,
right,
unless it's both big and terrible, in which case that's
more of a warning,
you
really
knowing.
Yeah.
If it's just a bit of a rubbish game and you're unlikely to have heard of it,
Yeah. You know, like Rome 2 didn't work very well when it came out and wasn't that good, but it's several stratospheres ahead of like the Unity asset swap garbage.
Oh yeah,
that's milling around on Steam.
You see people saying things like, "Oh, this is the worst game I've ever played. It's just terrible." And you're like, "It's not very good, but fuck off. There are so many worse things than this."
Yeah. And I mean, I will say that some of those games are possibly just people getting super early into making games. It's just a piss about experiment they've put together. But then that shouldn't, I would argue that probably shouldn't be on Steam if that's the case. Yeah, like everyone has to start somewhere with one man game development or whatever, but
isn't it itch.io these days, or itch.io, whatever it
is? Yeah, like that seems like an appropriate platform for your experimental stuff. Or I guess you can just say, well, hell, just let everything on Steam and have at it. But
Steam curation is bad in general.
Yeah.
I don't just mean in terms of the community. I mean in terms of curating what to put on Steam, what not to put on Steam. Valve's customer support is legendary awful. Their communication with the public is legendarily awful. I wrote an article about how awful Valve is, in fact, and I got a lot of people shouting at me going, they made Half-Life.
Yeah, they did, and that's a good game.
Yes, it is. But that the fact that they're a really shit company with a broken structure and absolutely terrible communication that really needs to shake things up a bit, but won't because they make shitloads of money, that has nothing to do with the fact that Half-Life is a good game.
Yeah, they... it wasn't good. You know, Greenlight wasn't the solution to anything, but it wasn't good prior to Greenlight either, because at that point you had quite a few extremely high quality games that just weren't being put on or allowed on Steam for some weird reason, and you had a bunch of people going, why isn't this on Steam? This seems perfect. And you look at it and go, yeah, you're right, that should be on there. Why isn't it?
The weird thing is, a lot of the games that you think are really good games and should be on Steam do get added to Steam, but not, from what I can tell, through the Greenlight process.
Yeah, that's just through whatever traditional... whatever process they had in place before Greenlight, means contacting Valve directly and filling in some forms, probably.
Yeah, I mean, was King of Dragon Pass like that, which was on GOG for about 2 or 3 years before it finally turned up on Steam? And I don't think that went through Greenlight. Yeah. It's like, that is an amazing game that probably should have been up there a hell of a lot sooner.
That was, I mean, the Steam release is slightly different, I think, from the GOG version as well, but that's in part just because it was so long before they got on Steam that they'd put together a slightly different version by then.
But you also get loads of really weird Japanese games that I'm almost certain haven't gone through Greenlight. It's just weird. There is no consistency to it. And they don't really have any need to change because they've got a monopoly on this. So,
I guess, but then the problem is, if you say, right, we're not going to let everything... You either say anything gets on here, or you say, right, there's some kind of curation. But then then you have to set up what the rules are for that curation.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This is arguably what they need to do. Either let everything on, or have some sort of consistent curation. The problem is, they are doing neither of these things, and they have no reason to change.
I guess my point is there such a thing as consistent curation? I mean, I think there's always going to be... you're always going to get some examples where it's going to feel like it was the wrong decision to let this on or not to let this on. But I think that would... Having those a few examples like that would still be preferable to... Hey, anything goes.
Well, in fairness... In fairness, that did used to happen quite a lot, where terrible games would wind up on Steam and nobody could understand how or why. And then they implemented Greenlight, and now the complaints about the terrible games being on Steam have kind of mostly stopped, with the exception of stuff that is very clearly the sort of thing that you would have played for free on Flash 15 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. It's not.
It's not an issue.
It doesn't have an easy answer.
No.
Yeah.
But have we made a joke? Getting back to the point, have we made a joke about how digital homicide has now become commercial suicide?
No, but I think people may have got to that one before.
I suspect so. It's fairly obvious.
Yeah. They're now looking for a lawyer to help them take action against further action against Valve, I believe. They're doing it the normal way that you advertise for a lawyer, which is just putting it up on their website. Going, if there's any lawyers reading, come and help us out. We'll maybe pay you. I assume they have some funds with which to pay their legal counsel. I don't know.
I just don't know what to think about this whole thing. As I said, it feels like pretty much everyone is in the wrong in some way, with the exception of Jim Sterling, who's just doing his fucking job.
No, assuming. I think it's just Digital Homicide are in the wrong.
You don't think that the people shouting death threats and abuse over the internet aren't in the wrong?
Not to the extent that they should be sued, no.
Sued, I agree. That is to say, I agree that they should not be sued. On the other hand, I don't think that that's the sort of thing that should be allowed with impunity.
No, they should have just got a ban from the specific game forum. If they keep at it, they should have been banned from the community hubs. And if they keep at it, then they should have been banned from Steam. That would be my system.
But that would require Valve to actually do something.
Yeah.
So that's not happening.
So
you put up with all of this horrific abuse being hurled at you, or you ask Valve if you can do something about these people, and Valve won't respond to you, so you subpoena for the information, at which point Valve go, oh, you've subpoenaed us, that's it, you're off. Because Valve are a giant, monolithic monopoly of a corporation.
This is kind of what I mean.
I can totally understand why Valve removed everything from the store, because that's obviously what you do when someone initiates a form of legal action. You stop doing business with them.
You can't continue to do business with them. It's not tenable anymore.
But on the other hand, I can't help but feel that they should probably have done something earlier, and to some extent it's their responsibility to do so.
This is
kind of what I mean. Bad as Digital Homicide's games probably are, I haven't dived into that particular cesspool myself, they do not deserve that sort of shit. Nobody does.
No. Obviously they're not alone in that.
I've seen a lot of this stuff being hurled around.
Yeah, just be nice, people.
The solution, isn't it? If everyone's just nice,
you can. Well, not completely. I mean, you can slag someone's game off. That's still fine. That's partially my job. So obviously,
that's absolutely
I support
my
that.
Job.
Just stick to. Stick to the facts.
Yeah.
Of I don't like this game because of this and this and this.
Yes.
As opposed to
I hope your mother is raped to death by a radioactive dog.
That's very creative, Tim.
First thing that popped into my head.
you've been studying the Steam forums closely, I see.
Apparently so.
Honing your material.
That's kind of what I mean. It's a situation where I kind of understand it.
I feel like they should have chosen better examples in their statement, though, because in the first one, there was actually a guy going, hey, you shouldn't leave comments like that. That's not really a very nice thing to do. So that was some quite nice community self-policing. In one of the other ones, the person actually was banned. So that was the moderation actually working.
Okay.
And then in a couple of others, nothing had happened, and that was bullshit. But it was a 50-50 ratio. It wasn't all bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a bit shit, basically, in general.
It is a bit shit, yeah. It is.
Although it's also kind of amusing to watch.
Well, it's kind of amusing just because of the whole... their extremely litigious angle.
Yeah.
It's always quite funny when that goes wrong.
Yeah.
All right. That's enough Digital Homicide and saying Steam's rubbish.
That's probably too much Digital Homicide, to be honest.
probably is.
The metaphor was probably too much, honestly.
No, I think we need to revisit that. Who? So the steam, the steam users are the people who just live in the back alley, just hurling horrendous slurs at the kebab seller for no particular reason. They could be saying, "Hey, your kebabs are bad," but no, they have to take it too far, don't they? Stop, Tim! You're just leaving me to drown in this metaphor. Help! Give me
what
a ladder. Throw me a rope.
Okay. Before I do that, I have to ask: is there any more news you want to talk about?
Not really.
Okay. In that case, in this metaphor, who would Batman be?
Batman would be the hypothetical good moderation system that doesn't yet exist, but you know, that's something we can all dream of and aspire to.
He's the hero we need, but not necessarily the hero
he is. Just get Batman to moderate Steam. You're fine.
Oh man, that would actually. I've just had a vision of. Have you seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
I haven't. No.
The very end of the film, the entire film is basically them going on a road trip because people are leaving internet comments about how they're shit.
Right.
And at the end of the film, they get enough money that they can fly around and find all of the people who left these mean comments about them.
Right.
And it's just them knocking on doors and then beating up children.
Yeah, that's pretty much how the Batman system would work.
That would be great. It's just you're sat there typing on your computer, right, inevitably full of homophobic slurs and all this stuff, and then Batman just bursts through your window and kicks the shit out of you.
And just reads a couple of them back to you and then starts punching you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I approve of this in terms of whether it would technically constitute due process.
Batman doesn't constitute due process.
I mean, well, that's always the problem with him. He's a bit of a fascist when it comes down to it. But it's okay because he only goes after the bad people.
Yeah.
So that's lucky. What was I going to say? Oh, I was just going to say also he's got a supercomputer, so that'll help a lot.
Yes, he'll be able to track people down very easily, considering some of the ridiculous shit that computer can do.
Absolutely. So you've played episode 2 of Batman.
I have. Telltale. Batman the Telltale Series, episode 2, Children of Arkham.
Yes. Please refer to the game with its full title throughout this segment. Please.
Shit. This is going to add like 6 minutes onto the podcast's runtime.
On second thoughts, let's not do that. I'm going to have to do the thing that you didn't do at the beginning of the podcast and fake ignorance because I've read your review.
Okay.
How is it technically now? Because episode 1 was a bit technically iffy.
It's a little bit better insofar as I didn't encounter any game-breaking bugs, which I did in episode 1.
And that's good.
Probably fixed. In terms of kind of general polish and stuff, it's still kind of wank. Frame rate drops, loading screens for no apparent reason. By which I mean, so I didn't really give an example of this in the review. I don't mind if, for instance, Batman hops in the Batmobile and drives off, and then it cuts to a black screen for a moment while it loads in the next bit. That I can understand.
Sure.
On the other hand, Batman is in the middle of shouting at someone, drops down from the rafters and lands in front of them, and then it cuts to a black screen to load for a few seconds before cutting back to Batman getting up.
Yeah, that's like when they're showing something on TV that's previously had adverts in it, and they've chopped out the ad, and there's just kind of a weird pacing break all of a sudden. Yeah.
It does that quite a few times.
The frame rate drops is incomprehensible. Like that's not a taxing engine or a taxing game. That's really crazy.
No. Yes.
That's absolutely crazy.
I don't really have anything much to say about that. It's not consistent or anything. At first I thought, it's just at the start of a scene when it's loading in. No, it's not. It's occasionally at the start of a scene when it's loading in, but occasionally it's right in the middle of a scene. It will just start juddering for a moment for no apparent reason.
I don't understand that at all. I mean, the Game of Thrones game, which was the most recent other than Batman, I think. Walking Dead, Michonne. Game of Thrones or Michonne. They were both 60 FPS all the way through, fine.
I kind of wonder
me,
if it's...
anyway. Batman doesn't look any noticeably different, really.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wonder if it's just that it's... I mean, I kind of assume on consoles it's probably running at 30 or something like that. I don't know if there's something going on
there.
It feels like it has definitely been designed for consoles. Like, even the QTE prompts. It shows Q and E as keyboard keys and so on. But when it's like, press left, it's not A or anything like that. It's actually a big swooping arrow to the left.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, I feel like I should be swiping or moving an analog stick, but no.
I did like the bit where you said one of the QTE prompts was completely off the screen. Well, not completely, mostly off the screen.
Yeah, the guy I had to punch, the prompts to punch him was on his face, which is fine, except that the camera, he was sort of facing 90 degrees away from it, so I could see that the prompt was there because I could see the side of it. But because the prompts in this are kind of sort of flat... it made it very difficult to work out whether it was a Q or an E.
Do you think he was supposed to be facing you, or do you think the camera was supposed to be in a different place, or was the QTE symbol supposed to be somewhere else?
I have no idea. I think it was probably meant to be there. It's just that, you know, they probably played it on controller, and on controller, I guess you've got coloured buttons instead, so you can more easily tell what it is, as opposed to a bit of grey text.
Pretty sure I remember Wolf Among Us having color-coded. By the way, performance in Wolf Among Us was pretty goddamn atrocious on the Xbox 360 at some point.
I played it on the PC. It was lovely.
I'm sure it was.
Just goes
to show, really, that PCs are the best, and all the other consoles should be burned in a big fire.
Yes. there's loads of weird little technical issues like that. Just a general lack of polish in general. Like, the lip syncing is way off. Like, I'm not expecting syllable to syllable lip syncing, but I do expect a person's mouth to move when they're talking, which it doesn't at least one point.
Are you sure this wasn't some sort of psychic character from the Batman universe that you were dealing with? And they were beaming it telekinetically into Batman's brain.
Telepathically, but I'm fairly certain not, because it was the mayor's assistant. I don't recognise her. Maybe.
That's going to be the big reveal.
Yeah, actually the villain.
Yeah,
and the animations are still a bit janky. They're fine for the most part, like in all of the quick time events and all of the, well, okay, let's face it, 80% of the game, but at any point where you can actually walk around, the animations are just incredibly stilted. The walk cycles are hideous and
that's because Batman's got a stick up his bum.
Quite possibly. I did discover, though, that it's quite entertaining to just sort of tap the key over and over again to make it sort of move like one frame into his walk animation and then instantly snap back to standing bolt upright. I may have to make a video of that because it was funny. It entertained me for a full 30 seconds.
Animatronic Batman jitters across the screen. that sounds good.
It's brilliant. Yeah, I might give that a whirl. After we finish recording this, I'll go and record a snippet of that because it's great. So technically it's a bit shoddy, but nothing game-breaking, because it's a Telltale game, and even things like the QTEs being invisible doesn't matter.
You can just guess the wrong key, and it'll probably just let you go past. Or just press nothing, and it'll probably let you go past. It doesn't matter.
Technically, not amazing.
It sounds like you kind of like where... Or at least what they seem to be doing with Batman, in the sense of they're trying to do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Which is good. I'm glad, because we don't need another Batman that's just the same as all the other Batmen, do we really?
No, I mean, I do love seeing like the different takes that every individual iteration takes on the franchise. Like things like the Christopher Nolan movies had a very unique take on the Batman mythos, compared to a lot
Batman
of
and Robin.
Others.
Batman yeah. and Robin had a very unique take. Had a unique take on it as well.
Well, I mean, even if you take something like Batman the Animated Series and you compare that yeah. to The Dark Knight, they have very, very different worlds and settings and takes on the characters. You can do the same yeah. if you look at any of the Arkham games and the Christopher Nolan films. And to my mind, I think the Arkham games are probably among my favourite of the Batman universes, just because they kind of they managed to mash up the sort of real world dark stuff with a lot of the sillier Batman stuff, like a giant green crocodile man. And they made it work.
And a bit of animated series stuff, because they have the voice acting cast.
Yes.
Partially from that. So.
But yeah, I mean, I like seeing these different iterations. And I do like the take that they have on the Penguin here. It's a bit different to usual. He's not a short, waddling, fat man with a monocle and a top hat. He's an incredibly skinny cockney. He's one of Brucey's old childhood friends, and he's apparently a big shot criminal over in the UK or something like that. And he's come back to Gotham for some mysterious reason and is muttering about revolutions. You kind of met him in the first episode and he talked about revolution briefly and then he didn't turn up again. And this second episode focuses a lot more on him. And his plans and stuff. And I know from the fact he's going to turn up in the next episode, but I'm sort of hoping that the next episode will introduce another major antagonist. So the first episode was Carmine Falcone. This second episode is more about the Penguin, and if it kind of goes in this sense and builds up towards whatever the hell is going on. I would quite like that.
Clock King.
Perhaps.
I hope so. He was in some great animated series episodes.
I can barely remember him.
He's just obsessed with time, obviously.
Yes, well, he's called Clock King. I like this sort of thing. It will be a little bit dull if they have now sort of introduced the majority of the characters and it's just going to be this lot for the next three episodes or whatever.
No, not Clock. They should do Sportsmaster. He's great.
Okay, I don't remember him at all.
He's just an incredibly obviously sports-themed villain. So, like, you know, he'll throw javelins and basketballs and stuff at people, and he's quite fit, but that's basically it. he's like a roided out gym teacher, basically, with a grudge against Sportsmaster.
Okay, that sounds amazing. Although they have managed to make some of the more ridiculous villains work reasonably well in different continuities, I guess. Like if you think about Captain Boomerang, or whatever the fuck he was called, he apparently
that's his name.
Wasn't shit in Arrow.
No, he was quite good. Yeah.
Yeah, bits and pieces like that. Like people have managed to make the Mad Hatter not completely ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
There are lots of directions they can go, and I kind of hope they take them. I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the first episode. Although that's not difficult, because the first episode was just very bland from start to finish, really, and full of technical issues.
There's a cat here.
Kitty!
Any cat audio is because there is a cat here. Hello, look. I'm doing a podcast, cat. Right. Yeah, thanks. That's Batman.
Yeah, my recommendation would be to hold off for the time being. You know, wait to see how this series shakes out.
That's usually quite good advice for Telltale stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there are occasional outliers, Borderlands, or sorry, Tales from the Borderlands, Wolf Among Us. Both of those I would have recommended on the strength of their initial episodes. Whereas Batman, on the other hand, started off really badly. The second episode kind of seems all right. Anyway, you've been playing.
I've been playing, well, a couple of things, but Divinity Original Sin 2, the early access version, which is, as with the first Original Sin, the original Sin. Well, not the original Sin, that's to do with Adam and Eve. But,
start again, Peter.
I've been playing the first act of Divinity Original Sin 2, which is what is available currently in early access.
Okay.
There we go. That's
we never got around to playing this in co-op or in arena PvP mode or whatever.
No, I would like to play it in co-op. I have absolutely zero interest in a PvP arena mode. I'm going to be honest with you.
I'm sort of curious as to how rubbish that would be. Because that does kind of feel like
okay,
the sort of thing
the combat's
that is
good. But
it does sort of feel like the sort of thing that would just be slotted in as now with competitive multiplayer.
People asked for it. I mean, it does have a good combat system. I presume it's basically just that, but against another person, which...
Yeah, I'd be curious
seems perfectly fine. I'm just not that interested in that.
I'd be curious as to whether it sort of work off a Warhammer-esque sort of points system. Whether you take your own characters, whether you generate new characters for this, or whether there's a big pool to choose from, or... You know, I think it could be interesting as a short-term thing. Sort of like XCOM's competitive multiplayer, where one person is the aliens. It could be interesting. Does it still have the system where you're... Because Divinity Original Sin, you have the two protagonists, and I assume you still do.
No.
No?
You only have one.
Oh, man.
So straight away, that kind of answers that question. No, you don't get into rock, paper, scissors arguments with yourself.
God damn it. I love that. I liked the fact that the other character who I had generated and given a personality would actually argue against my decisions and go, no, we're not fucking doing this. We're doing it my way.
You can, so the other people you recruit into your party, you still occasionally for certain decisions role play what they're saying at those junctures. For example, there's a bit in Act 1 where I got into a situation where I was returning some stolen merchandise to a gang boss, basically, and he was like, all right, who'd you get it off then? I want to know who the culprit is. And then it was going through each of my party members deciding whether they thought, yes, we should give the guy up, or no, he hasn't really done anything wrong. We shouldn't, kind of thing.
That's not really anything special.
It's not,
basically
it's
any
not the same as
RPG with characters that have personalities do that. I mean, Dragon Age does that. Everything BioWare does that with your current party members commenting on whether they like or dislike your decisions.
Yeah, but this is slightly different in that you choose what they say.
Oh, okay. Rather,
yeah. It's not just, they don't just chime in. It's like, oh, what's this other person in your party going to say about this?
So what sort of impact is that going to have on the gameplay then?
I don't know. At the moment, not a lot, really. just for fun. I think it's there for co-op as a system of, your party giving their opinions in-game kind of thing. I think that's strictly speaking what it's there for. So if you were playing as four people, you would all give your response and then...
Sure.
I don't know if it would, like, tally it up as a vote or whether, like, the host would still choose, but it would be a way of showing what everyone thought about a given situation.
That's actually kind of cool. Then.
That's my impression. So you only have the one, you make one protagonist, and they have some default pre-created ones that have actual backstory now that you can choose if you wish. You can still do a completely custom build if you want.
Does that kind of change anything? Is there extra dialogue based on that?
Yes. Ugh. Yes, there is. I played a lizard guy called the Red Prince, and I got a lot of specific Red Prince related quest stuff and dialogue.
Do you have to take the characters as is, or can you adjust them before you go in?
You can adjust them insofar as you can change their class. So you can, if it reckons they're a mage, you can go, no, I want them to be a knight or a ranger or whatever instead. With a custom character, you can get some of this extra dialogue stuff. They have a kind of tag system where you give your character they're a scholar or they're a jester or a rogue or whatever. And then for certain conversations, it'll come up in brackets, this is a thing a scholar can say. And people will respond to you depending on things like your race and stuff like that. Like if you've chosen a lizard and that character doesn't like lizard people, then obviously they're going to be a dick to you. And then you can try and sue them or whatever. I don't know. No, well, actually, in this game, you can just kill them. So it's even more direct action.
All right. I have another question with regards to stuff that I really liked about the first game. Do you still start off as a kleptomaniac art thief?
I did a bit of art theft. That's still in there. It's they've mitigated it slightly because they realized it was a bit overpowered. Clearly.
It's not just the fact that it was overpowered. It's more the fact that regardless, it was easily, it was the best and to some extent only way to get a reasonable amount of capital was to walk into people's houses and nick all the paintings.
Go, I'll have that. I'll be having that.
With very little. Very little in the way of in-game repercussions.
Yeah, it's funny that the guy you were selling them to was never like, where are you getting all of these, by the way? Am I going to get in trouble later for having all of these?
This looks just like the one that's in my house.
Didn't the mayor commission this painting last year? Yeah. No, well, so now you can still try and steal everything. Some stuff is, as I think it was in the first game as well, like it goes red when you mouse over it, as like, this is going to be, you're going to be stealing this, people aren't going to be happy. And now if someone like suspects you of stealing something or they see you stealing it, you then have to take a stat check because they're kind of like, hey, you nicked that, you fucker. I'm going to frisk you now. So you might still get away with it, but you might not. And then you might have to fight them if you don't. And also, if you do get away with it, it is permanently labeled as stolen in your inventory. So one of my guys was wandering around with armor that just said stolen in the... just to remind you that you're a filthy criminal.
And I'm guessing, much like in the Elder Scrolls games, if a guard has any reason to stop you and to check for stolen goods, he's suddenly going to be naked.
That didn't happen to me, but I'm sure that's the sort of thing that the system is intended for. So that they've kind of prevented you from being a thief constantly.
It doesn't so much sound like they've prevented it. It sounds a bit more like they've expanded the system. Like if you want to be an art thief, you actually have to be an art thief. You don't just do it for the sake of it.
And you'll need like higher sneaking stats and you know. Because, you can still go around pickpocketing people and so on, but you obviously need the skills to be able to do that to get away with it. That's all fine. That's good. Something else I like that they've done is split up the combat-specific stats and the sort of civic social stats. So now when you level up, it'll be like, right, you've got a point to spend on combat stuff and a point to spend on social stuff, which is good because in the other game it was also like, well, I do kind of want him to have bartering abilities, but I also don't want to be shit at fighting, so I'm just going to spend all my points on combat.
I'd quite like to throw bigger fireballs.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a couple of other questions, but I don't know if you'd be able to answer them because they were pretty particular to the way that I played Divinity.
I can give it a go. I can try.
Horrifically abusing the summon system.
Right. I so far haven't found any summon spells in the...
Oh, okay.
They're still in there because some of the enemies did it against me. But I didn't have... Yeah. I didn't come across any summon.
Yeah, because I just remember being able to summon something right before the start of combat and have that start combat, and everything would focus on that for a while. And if it died, it didn't really matter because the summon spell would have cooled down by then and I could resummon it.
I imagine they may have tweaked something like that. The combat's changed a bit now because you get armor values. You don't just have a health pool. You've also got like an armor, a physical armor and a magic armor pool as well, like based on your gear and what you're wearing and stuff like that. And so that means it's harder to instantly use all your like stunning and knockout spells immediately. Because you've generally got to get through some armor. Like if you're smart about it and you single out the guy who doesn't have much magic armor, then great, you can do spells at him all day long. That's fine. But yeah, it kind of it makes the early stages of combat a little bit more dynamic and tactical, I think, rather than because I mean, I didn't finish the first Divinity. But even having not finished it, eventually you would kind of get into a pattern where you would basically break out the same, well, like you've just described with the summon spell, you kind of break out the same stuff in the same pattern every time.
Unless there is particular reason not to.
I think stuff like this gives a bit more reason not to.
It may also just wind up switching it around, though.
It might.
I guess that's the sort of thing we won't be able to tell until the full thing is out. And at this point, it's in early access, so any, you know, it's possibly completely going to change.
Yeah.
Can I still, like, call down rain and then use lightning to electrify everybody and then accidentally freeze it under my feet and have my warrior skid 30 feet on his arm?
Yes, you can.
Ace!
That is exactly what you can and probably will be doing. Yeah, all the elemental stuff is back.
Great.
There are still handy barrels hanging around in certain areas of places for you to helpfully explode or poison or whatever. You can also now use Bless and Curse as elemental things. So if you bless fire, for example, it then becomes healing fire, which is quite helpful.
Okay. I was thinking that it was going to become holy fire or something and it would destroy the undead or something.
Well, no. Well, actually, it probably is called holy fire, but it heals you. But it would destroy the undead because healing against the undead in this series,
yes,
Cat Has Returned, actually does damage them, so that would work. And the curse one, I think that puts like contagion on people, so you can curse water and stuff like that.
Okay,
so that's quite good. What most impressed me was that the premise is you start off in this place called Fort Joy, which despite its name is basically a concentration camp for people who have an affinity with Source. These religious zealots are basically rounding up Source.
People who've been hitting the Source a bit.
People who've been hitting the Source. The sorcerers. They are called sorcerers, but it's with a U. Anyway, they've been rounding them all up, so you're in prison. Much like a Bethesda game, in fact. You start off in prison. And there are like, there must be like 10 different ways, I think, to get out of Fort Joy. Which is really, really cool. Some of them are just basic RPG quests. Help this guy and he'll do this for you. Help this other person and they'll tell you about a tunnel or something.
Yeah.
Or you can do the very original sin-ish thing. And once you've got hold of the teleport spell or some teleport gloves, you can just kind of figure it out for yourself. Like, oh, I'll just teleport beyond the gate and then do this and work it out myself, basically.
Nice.
Which is very cool. And that, you know, it's similar to stuff they did in the first iteration.
That's kind of one of the things that set Original Sin apart a bit from a lot of its contemporaries. Even games like Dragon Age Dragon Age Origins, since we're talking about games with Origin in the name. Mm-hmm. Even that, which was a very classic RPG, didn't really support that sort of thing very much. It was largely just scripted stuff, whereas this seems to be kind of embracing the idea of sequence breaking and letting you do things however you want, which is what original Sin did, and that's great.
Yep, and it works. It seems to work fine as well. It's not like you do something and then are like, oh shit, now I'm trapped, or because I've skipped ahead, now I'm stuck in this like level 20 fight that I can't do. Or
they seem
good at figuring out ways to avoid that happening. And it's the kind of game as well where if you do run into a massively overleveled fight, then you just know, oh, I shouldn't be here right now, really. I can go and do some other stuff first. But if you're good enough at the combat system, you might be able to beat it. It depends how. If they're a level or two ahead of you, maybe. If they're like five levels,
I just one-shot you. I just remember taking the wrong exit out of town in Divinity Original Sin.
And you go, oh, maybe I should stick around, do a bit more art theft first.
Oh, I'm dead now.
Whoops. But no, I like how this is shaping up. It's kept a lot of, well, basically all of what was good about the other game, and it's added some cool stuff like different races. I like that you can now be a lizard or an elf. Oh, by the way, the elves are cannibals. They eat corpses. Whenever you find bits of body lying around, you can feed them to the elf in your party and should, like, gain additional memories and stuff. It's great. You need the corpse eater skill, but
I was going to say, is this all elves, or is this just the one in your party?
I don't know if they all have corpse eater by default, or whether they're the only ones who can get it. I haven't really examined that closely, but I just love the fact that they're kind of stereotypical, like tall, nature loving elves. Oh, and by the way, they also eat people. Great.
That is awesome. These might be the first elves that I want to fill my entire party with.
Yeah.
I imagine, actually, that if you play as an elf, people are going to be quite wary of you.
Yeah. So I think the only one that isn't in at the moment is the undead start, which I believe is being written by professional stretch goal artist Chris Avalon. But that one's not quite ready yet, so that one's not there. But
I got told off by him on Twitter for calling him that.
Did you call it? Dear Chris Avalon, are you a stretch goal?
I'm going to have to find this again in a moment.
We haven't offended him.
No, it wasn't anything like that.
I don't want to upset Chris Avalon, I like him.
He just said something about how he really didn't like the term a stretch goal or something like that.
Oh, okay. It's like, well, Chris, stop personifying it then.
I'm going to have to check the Twitters.
Go ahead. I'll try and think of something else to think about saying about Original Sin.
Do you know? Oh,
I know something I haven't mentioned. Pet Pal, which was great.
Yes.
Oh, you could let you talk to animals. That's back again. But all the animal stories are really depressing in Act 1. It's stuff like you come across a dog next to a dead... it's dead master, and the dog's like, is he ever going to wake up? Is my master ever going to wake up? And you have to be like, no, he's dead. And then the dog's sad. And that's it. You just made a dog sad. There's also this black cat that starts following you around at the beginning of the game. But if you... its pathfinding isn't great at the moment, so it's bad at wandering too close to the kind of restricted areas, and when it does that, the guards just shoot it on sight, and then that cat's dead, which is pretty sad.
That's horrific. Yeah. So what you're saying is, don't take Pet Pal.
Pretty much, yeah. There's another one where I found a bear cub and its mother was dead. It's like, Jesus Christ, Larry. what's wrong with you? There were a couple of others that were funnier and that were better and, you know, more whimsical. I think they're just, it's a bit bleaker in general, really. I mean, you start off in a concentration camp and, yeah, all the animals are depressed.
Well, maybe they're trying to go for something to do with Petter. They're going for a Petter tie-in. And maybe later on you get the perk Petter Pal. And you get to say, yes. Okay, now I'll stop. I found the tweet. I said something.
Okay.
I didn't even tweet directly at Chris Avalon. Was it someone else
He's combing Twitter for his name.
Well, it was someone else had basically said something like, oh, at this point, I'm fairly certain you could write a program to randomly generate an RPG Kickstarter pitch. I basically said, as long as it always remembers to include Chris Avalon as a stretch goal. And he responded by saying, stretch goal is a phrase that's like taking 2d6 piercing damage to my head.
Fair comment. Well, yeah, anyway, he's doing some stuff for Original Sin 2. You will be not surprised to learn. So,
Was he a stretch goal, or was he in this from the start?
I think... I feel like for this one, he just got involved from the start. I think Larian just approached him and said, would you like to do some stuff for Original Sin 2?
He said, sure, I'm just... only writing for 7 other games at the moment. Yeah, I've got some free time.
Yeah, I don't think that was a specific... if we get to 2 million Avalon will do something. I think he just was approached because it was after he left Obsidian, so presumably he's somewhat freelance.
Yes. Would you recommend it while it's in early access? Would you recommend holding off?
I mean, I kind of would, like, not because it's bad in any way and not because I don't think it'll be finished. I the opposite. I think it will absolutely be finished because, you know, they've shown to be very reliable as a company and seem to be perfectly solvent. And it's good. It's just because of the manner of game it is, it being a single or co-op RPG. I mean, unless you particularly want to play through Act 1 early. But, you know, presumably when it goes to a full release, it'll all reset and you'll have to play through Act 1 again. It really just depends on whether you want to do that.
Yeah. On the one hand, I kind of want to play it. On the other hand, I kind of want to just wait for the full thing and enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's kind of pricey as well.
I guess we may have to do some co-op at some point to test out the systems.
I would like to do that. Yeah, it's it's like $45. I think probably as a kind of Kickstarter hangover, because I presume the Kickstarter buy-in for getting early access was presumably like $45 or so. So therefore they want to sell it for the same price on early access to make sure it wasn't like, hey, I Kickstarted this and it cost me more. Why is that?
Yeah. Potentially it would have been cheaper on Kickstarter actually. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
And I absolutely think it will be worth $45 when it's really, I think it'll be worth more than $45 when it is released next year. It's just, yeah, if you'd rather wait until it's all finished and done, I would absolutely respect that decision. Good looking game.
It sounds like it's shaping up well.
It is very well, and I hope it comes out during a period where I don't have or you don't have 50 other games to look at.
I'm fairly certain that one of us will find the time to play it one way or another.
I'll certainly play it. It just depends whether I... Yeah. And I'll be writing about it. It depends whether I do it enough to be able to review it.
I still haven't finished Original Sin. I did start playing Enhanced Edition, and then I stopped because I didn't really want to go through the entire game again just yet.
I kind of half hope that this is going to be a bit shorter than Original Sin, in part because they do seem to have quite a bit more replayability there with the different races and different starts and stuff like that, and evidently lots of different ways to progress through the story. So
I get the sense that's probably, you would know this better than me, but I get the sense that's probably going to be more for occasional but regular quests rather than every quest, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's more situational, I guess. It's like, okay, your first task is to get out of this situation.
Sure.
There are several quests that pertain to this.
It
depends what you want to pursue, really. I don't know if it's going to be 3 acts, and this is act 1, and I got through it in like 12 hours, that would be quite a bit shorter than Original Sin, I think. But it may not be 3 acts, it might be like 5 or something, so I don't know. I also didn't do everything in Act 1 because not everything is there yet. It's not there are some quests that are obviously not fully implemented. They're just sort of, there are areas where nothing's really happening at the moment, but obviously will be in future.
I was just checking to see how long I played Divinity Original Sin Classic for, and I played that for 51 hours, and I think I was at the entrance to the final dungeon.
Alright. Well, so, I can easily see Act 1 being 15 hours or so once it's fully finished and released, so that, you know, if it's three acts, that's going to get you to about 50 hours. So, yeah, fair enough. So, Tim, what else have you been playing?
All sorts of shit, inevitably.
Pick one.
I have been playing... I played a bit of Paladins, actually. High Res's Overwatch game.
No, Tim, it's not an Overwatch. They've been very clear that it's not... I mean, to be fair, it's obviously in development. Was in development at the exact same time as Overwatch. So
I also
I think a lot of these hero shootery type things were in development at the same time, and now they're all coming out.
That's yeah, I believe so, because it's not the most difficult idea in the world. MOBAs surging in popularity at that time, and people going, hey, we could make a first-person shooter, but we could have sort of MOBA-style characters in it. That would work. Yeah. That's not really a huge leap. And so the fact that you've kind of got bits and pieces that take this sort of thing, like, you know, Overwatch and Battleborn to some extent, and Paladins. It's not too much of a stretch. It is very similar to Overwatch, but on the other hand, at the moment, it's also very slight. You know, it's early content. Was going to add a hell of a lot more to it.
It's free to play, right? Is it a Steam Early Access thing, or is it their own launcher? Or
it is on Steam. It does open with their own launcher as well, so you can play it however you want. I think Steam launches their launcher as well in much the same way that Smites did, and I think Tribes Ascend did as well.
Yeah, that's the one of theirs I played, which is quite good.
And various other bits and pieces that they made probably did the same as well, but I don't think I tried any of their other stuff. It's free to play. If you can get your hands on it for free, and there are, I think, 4 or 5 characters unlocked by default. And as you play matches, you earn gold, which you can then use to unlock more. Or you can pay, I think it's 10 quid, in which case you unlock everything now and all stuff in the future, as well as get a load of other little cosmetic bits and pieces.
It's the Smite model.
Yes, I fully approve of this. I like this. It's basically a sense of pay 10 quid, get a game that's a bit like Overwatch, and don't have to deal with any of the free-to-play nonsense, which is good.
Yeah. I can't see any problem there.
At least it's good up until, you know, 6 months down the line when people go, actually, we don't want to play this anymore, and they shut it down.
Yeah, well, at the moment, I think there are... it was in the Steam top 10 played list, and it had like 30-odd thousand people on it. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
It doesn't surprise me. In fact. It does seem pretty good. I've liked what I've played, though I haven't played enough to really comment.
What sort of like modes of play does it have in at the moment?
Only one that I've seen. Right, okay. This is the one problem. I'm not sure whether there is more than I have seen, because until you reach level 5, you will only play against AI. Nowhere does the game tell you this.
So for a while you might think, oh, I'm doing really well.
Yeah.
is...
The idea behind this is presumably so that people will, you know, play, they will get the hang of how the game functions and works before they're dumped into matches against real people. The downside is that this doesn't necessarily appear to be working, because one of the things it does carry over from Smite and MOBAs and so on, which Overwatch doesn't, is that when you do various actions, like you kill an enemy or you stay on the control point, you heal an ally, whatever, you get sort of credits which you can spend for little buffs. Like, for instance, a permanent well, permanent for that match, 5% increase to your damage, or you take 20% less splash damage, or healing effects heal you for an extra amount, and so on and so forth. And I've been in quite a few games where people on my team have never, ever bought any of these things.
oh, well.
Yeah, so...
They don't sound that important, Tim. I'm sure you can get by with
without... Doubtless.
Just shows how you're truly hardcore if you can still win without without playing with all of the game's systems.
Absolutely. It's right now it's basically it's seemingly got one mode of play, which is that there is a control point, and both teams fight over it. Whichever team captures it then gets a payload cart, which they have to stay near to push it to the other team's base. Those maps are first to 4 points. As soon as the payload is either delivered or defended, it starts over again. And so they can actually go on for quite a while, because you might, for instance, the other team might capture the payload, and they'll get 1 point. They'll start pushing it towards your base, but you defend it, and then you get 1 point. And as it's first to four, it can go on for a little while if you're not dominating by capturing the point and pushing the payload.
I think this is the same mode Paul played when he previewed this in beta, I presume it was?
Quite possibly. As I say, this is the only mode I've seen which is on we'll say two maps, but they're both set in the same area, if that makes sense. It's the same terrain, it's the same island, it's sort of a tropical area, sort of beaches and palm trees and ruins and stuff like that.
Did they reuse anything from Tribes? Because there's some Tribes maps that are a bit like that.
Not that I
would blame them. Wouldn't blame them.
But. Not that I can remember, but it's been a while since I've played Tribes.
Fair enough.
Yeah, like I say, I don't know whether that's the only map and the only mode that's currently in there, or if it's just that that's the only one that the AI can play.
Right, right. And then when you hit level whatever, it'll suddenly, you can play this now. And then maybe if you hit level 10, you can play something else as well.
Maybe, but I don't know. I mean, it may just be that the AI, they've only configured its routines to work on two maps. Or it may be that there are only two maps and one mode in the game at the moment, and they're just going to gradually add content as things go on, which is what I expect. It's quite a similar mode to one of the Overwatch modes, which is also going to get a lot of comparisons. Quite a lot of the characters have similar abilities, although I don't really think they're particularly out of the ordinary abilities anyway. You've got a character who can throw down a gun turret, and you've got a guy who can project a big shield around himself, and you've with a sniper rifle that charges up the longer you hold the zoom in, and their ultimate ability reveals everyone on the map, and so on and so forth.
If we're not allowed to have dropping turrets and putting shields around ourselves, video games are finished.
Don't get me wrong, the fact that it plays a lot like Overwatch makes a lot of the comparisons feel... a lot more extreme. They would be like, okay, you've got the big guy who has a big chain hook that he can throw out, and if it hits someone, it'll pull them towards him, and then he can hit them with his close range attacks or whatever, which is exactly the same as Roadhog from Overwatch, and also exactly the same as Pudge from Dota, and exactly the same Stitches from Heroes of the Storm. And
I mean, these are kind of character archetypes, but they're archetypes for a reason. I don't think that seems particularly...
suspect that this will... I hope that the comparisons will get less so as they add more stuff.
Yeah.
Because if it's anything like Smite, then they are going to add characters and so on at a fairly fast rate, whereas Blizzard have added one since the launch of Overwatch, I think.
Just Anna, I think. Is that the only one?
And I suspect, you know, if they go according to Smite, you're probably going to be seeing a new character every 2 or 3 months.
But don't worry, Tim, if you solve the 20-year-long alternate reality game, then Sombrum might show up in Overwatch.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Paladins. I've been dipping into it and out of it.
Question would be then, why would you play it over Overwatch if you know,
it's free.
Suppose one thing is it's free, yeah. that's the answer, isn't it? It's free. Anything else besides it's free?
It's also
and
a
then
bit...
if you like it, you can buy the rest of it.
It's also a bit different to Overwatch in ways that haven't been mentioned. You've got the item system, as previously mentioned, or the buffs or what have you. You've got cards. Which
cards.
You get.
Of course you have cards.
It works sort of like the League of Legends mastery system. Insofar as you go into battle with several of these equipped. And they will boost, again, your stats or abilities or what have you. Yes, it's free. It's got, you know, different characters. It is similar. It is the same sort of game. It's kind of like saying if you play Dota, why would you look at Battle Right or something like that? It's similar. But... it's got some different stuff. It's fun to experiment with something new.
Yeah, or if you like FIFA, maybe you'd want to give PES a try, because it's the same game, essentially, but also very different in some ways.
The Overwatch comparisons are very overt, but I don't think there is anything, it's a clone behind that. Because...
no, I mean, there is that Chinese version of Overwatch, which is literally...
yes.
They've literally copied Overwatch. right down to the levels and the characters and everything. That's quite blatant and obvious and not the right thing to do. But I think if you're just within the same genre and you have, you know, even if you have similar modes of play and similar character archetypes, that's video games, man.
Yeah,
that's
also films.
That's also books. That's every creative medium, pretty much.
Don't get me wrong; it does feel very similar, but it also feels like. Oh, I hate myself for using this word. It feels like the zeitgeist. It is kind of the thing. It is the thing at the moment. Like, it's kind of the obvious direction to go in terms of trying to find a new genre. Because I know work started on this before Overwatch was even announced.
Everyone tried to do MMOs for a bit, then everyone tried to do MOBAs. Now everyone's doing hero shooters.
Yeah.
And they'll do something else next time.
Well, the interesting thing is, this isn't because of any big success. I think this is just because of the success of MOBAs. People like MOBAs. People also really like first-person shooters. What if we combine the two? And, I mean, Smite even was similar-ish to that, because that was kind of a third-person shooter perspective. It was definitely a MOBA, but...
I'd like to see that done with some other things. People like FIFA. They also like Total War games. What if we combine the two for some kind of strategic European hooligan simulator?
Oh, okay. I was thinking you meant something more like manage a football team, and it's actually like turn-based football, like Subutio or something.
Oh, that could be. Yeah, that could be good too. That could be good. Anything of that nature. Speaking of sports games, it seems like I should talk for a bit.
Yeah,
while you try to rehydrate.
My throat's getting a bit fucked for some reason. You'll have to excuse the coughing.
That's quite all right. I'm embarking on a brand new frontier in sports games. NBA 2K17, which 2K sent me, thinking that I might know about basketball games, which is wrong. I don't, but. I'm game to give it a try.
I own an NBA game. I own NBA 2K13. Apparently I bought it at one point and I've never played it.
Do you know what? I might be able to give you 17 because initially they gave me a code that was like region locked to what I presume is the UK and Europe, and then I had to get a US one, so you can probably have NBA 2K17 as well.
I will happily take a look at that. I would
unless it's just a completely fucked code, but I'm pretty sure it's just region locked.
I'm not gonna lie, I would like to play an NBA game again. On the other hand, I don't have 55 gigs of free hard drive space.
It is indeed 55 gigs inside. That's just the download size as well, so it probably expands to about 60. Yeah. It is actually, no, it's really kind of fascinating to see what a sport I'm not familiar with, what their like their big main game, how they approach it, and what sort of stuff you can do in it. At the moment, I'm going through the kind of career, the my player career mode.
North or South? Career.
Just all career. American career, like in not Red Dawn, the game that was Homeland, like Homeland.
Homefront.
I fucking get those confused.
Well, one's like, about terrorists and the other's about terror. Moving on.
So I'm playing the mode which FIFA is now trying to copy off, essentially, with their journey thing. So now I'm kind of seeing why, you know, why other people liked this and what is then going to be trying to be brought over into FIFA.
You play so as young upstart Alec Hunt here.
You start as whoever the fuck you want. You can give yourself any name. I named myself after myself because I'm the best basketball man there is. I was hoping to be able to scan my face in with their face scanning technology, but I had to do some like mobile app bullshit. I didn't have time for that. I couldn't be bothered.
Does it have the thing where you can put in what the announcers call you? Like, voice?
Well, see, it's a bit clever because you very quickly acquire the nickname the President of Basketball.
What? That is the worst nickname.
It's because you've announced your college choice while stood in front of a US flag, apparently, and everyone takes the piss out of you for this and calls you the President of Basketball.
Okay, that's so actually playing, quite good.
So in the commentary, they just refer to you as Prez. Just kind of cool. It's a nice way of getting around the fact that you can call yourself anything and look like anything.
Weed Lord Boner Hitler.
Weed Lord Boner Hitler is a perfectly valid name. And then it'll be good because after all the games, you'll get all the scout reports going, well, I think Weed Lord Boner Hitler is going to have to work on his layoff shots or whatever. Initially, my guy started off looking a bit like Geralt from The Witcher, but then by the time I'd finished, he looked a bit more like Jon Snow. So now I've basically got Jon Snow trying to play basketball.
I thought you were going to say he started off looking like Geralt from The Witcher, and then he ended up looking like Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen.
I wish.
Well, you saw what I did with WWE 2K, whatever it was.
Yeah, it's not... It's not quite as fully generous. I'm sure if you tried, you could make a horrific monster. I think the best way to make a horrific monster would probably to be using the face scan thing, but put some, I don't know, your cat or something in it to see if it could deal with that. I might try that.
Just put an actual picture of an orc in there.
See what happens. Yeah. Or yeah, just some random anime character or whatever.
God, I can just imagine it trying to map that on.
But no, for example, like when it's you know, you can choose like your height parameters and your shoulder span and stuff, but the maximum and minimums are not utterly ridiculous. Okay. Like you can't make yourself 5'1", unfortunately, which I was kind of a little bit sad about. But the basketball's really confusing, Tim. Because I had to choose like a position to play in, and I didn't recognize what any of the positions were.
Yeah,
really. Like there was center, which kind of made sense.
Yeah, that's the guy who's in the center.
That's what I figured. I went for small forward because I found it amusing that my 6'9" guy was called small forward.
Yeah, fair
which
enough.
Is maybe that's the joke. Like maybe that's why they're called that. I genuinely don't know.
I honestly can't remember. It's been too long.
And then within the genre, the subdivision of small forward, I could either be shot creator, which made sense. That was perfectly, I knew what that was. Or I could be something like glass shatterer or glass cutter or something, which I like, what is this? And the one I went for was slasher.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I'm a slasher. So I don't know what that is.
The President of Basketball is a serial killer.
It's a serial killer, yeah. Yeah.
You know what this makes me think, right? We need games like Mutant League Hockey again. We need sports games with chainsaws and bombs.
I think they tried to kickstart that, didn't they? Probably. A while back. I think it failed.
Well, that's just sad.
Yeah, I'd like to see an I don't really remember those games terribly fondly, but I like the idea and think that they could be done well.
I kind of do. I mean, admittedly, I only ever really played them in multiplayer with a friend, and they were just ridiculous and great.
Fair enough.
Everything is better in multiplayer.
What I will say is this had a pretty good tutorial mode. It just kind of popped you into a friendly match and basically progressively taught you what you can do.
Nice.
Cat almost knocked over my drink there. Cat, stop it. You know, it started off with easy stuff like here's passing, here's how you shoot, and then gradually went on to, right, if you move the analog stick in this incredibly precise manner, you can do amazing dribbling motions. And occasionally, like, a coach would cut in and go, right, when you're defending, you want to make sure that you can basically not be too close that you're fouling, but also close enough that you can always reach the ball with like an interception if necessary and stuff like that. It was pretty good. It didn't go through like every rule or anything like that, but it covered the controls within like 5 or 6 minutes so that I knew the basics. The thing that's screwing me up at the moment is that it uses X to shoot and B to pass, whereas in FIFA, B is shoot and X is a passing move, which I'm pretty sure I can change that though. So I think I'll be going in and just switching those over.
That's pretty good. That actually sounds kind of like WWE again, like the start of the career mode and that, because I think WWE has been doing the career mode stuff for years. But I'm fairly certain that that also kind of opened up with a tutorial section where my giant blue wonk-eyed weirdo with one arm that was about 2 inches thick and the other arm that was about a foot long.
I really need to stop allowing thalidomide babies to compete in WWE. It's not appropriate. It's quite offensive.
Wow, that's quite a potentially offensive joke you made there. I'm just glad I didn't make a similar one earlier because I was going to.
Yes. I cop to that.
It's fine.
Apologies.
I'm fairly sure it's fine. We're relatively on the edge with a lot of this podcast anyway, I think.
Well, we're the racists of the video game industry.
Well, apparently, yes.
We're PC users. Says the Daily Star. Accurate they are.
Yeah, WWE started off with you kind of going into the training ring, and it's like, okay, here's one of the old pros. He's going to show you how it's done. And it's like, okay, now, in this situation, what you want to do, you're probably going to want to grapple and do this and press this and make this incredibly awkward motion. And by the way, it all works as a rock, paper, scissors like this. If you push this button, then they do this, and then there's it. And then I didn't understand what was happening. But it was nice that they tried.
Yeah, I mean, I understood about 2/3 of what was happening with the basketball stuff, and then some of the other things with like the fancy dribbling moves, I kind of thought, this is probably a bit above me right now. If I get really into this, I'll try them later. But I mean, to be fair, that was the same with FIFA. Like, when I started playing those games, I wasn't trying to do fancy step overs or anything.
No, it's move the analog stick to run around the pitch and press the buttons to do a pass or do a big kick at the goal.
Exactly. But I'm really liking the career mode thing. At the moment, I'm still in college, and it I think there's like it basically 5 key matches that it's letting me play.
Have you exhausted your student loan?
I assume I'm on some kind of scholarship because I'm such an amazing basketball player.
Well, you are the president.
I don't actually know.
You are the president of basketball.
Exactly. Yeah. If I'm not getting a scholarship, who the hell is? It's nice. It's well presented, and it's kind of keeping me interested, and feels like I understand why FIFA is going for it, because the sort of be a pro modes in prior FIFA games have been very They're very kind of abstract and disconnected. You join a club, but there's no kind of attendant. You know, like you can win every trophy there is to win, but you won't get any kind of like special cutscene or there any kind of feedback for that. It's just like, oh, good job. You win everything.
There is no character to it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, it seems quite good. And currently my draft pick status is gradually improving as I play games and do quite well in them. I think I got like a B rating for my last game, so I must not be completely hopeless.
Nice.
Scored some baskets, did the hoops, didn't do any chaos dunks.
Yeah, I was gonna say, did you name your character Hoops Barkley?
No, I should have done. I really should have done.
You said you named him after yourself.
After me, yeah. If I had more time and more talent, I would call him Hoops Barkley and attempt to recreate the Hoops Barkley sprite from the game. But I think, unfortunately, that's beyond my talent. The character creator might be able to cope with it, but
I'm just curious if you can recreate the infamous chaos dunk that led to basketball being outlawed.
And the destruction of
so much of the world.
Maybe if I level up enough, you never know. And PC version seems perfectly fine and good.
Nice.
It runs at 60 FPS at 1080 for me. I've had a couple of dips in cutscenes, but that hasn't mattered because it's cutscenes. Yep. And also I basically just shoved everything on maximum to start with. I think if I lower some of the anti-aliasing and stuff, it'll probably sort that out. But the games themselves are solid 60. I think it's locked at 60. I have VSync on at the moment, so I'm not sure. But I will test that as well, see if it can go above 60. But if it doesn't, that's still pretty good. Anyway, it's not like a PES situation or anything where we get half the shit from older generations or anything. It seems to have everything very much intact from the main release.
It does seem like 2K do this stuff pretty well on PC, because I think I can remember WWE was in much the same way. It's sort of interesting. You mentioning earlier that you're kind of coming to this as, you know, from another sport. You're kind of seeing a sports game from an outside perspective. It's kind of interesting in one sense, in that I don't believe there's any real direct competition to the NBA games. Like, whereas with football, you've got FIFA and PES, but I don't think there is so much with...
No, EA used to do one.
Yeah.
And then there was a year when EA's release was like a complete disaster, and they either pulled it just before release or basically said after release, we're really sorry, this was terrible, and then they just haven't tried since. Yeah. So yeah, there's no at least for like a more simulation based one anyway. You know, there's arcade type ones out there, I think, but
there aren't that many of them either, mind you, but yeah, there are a few,
not as many as there were, but, they basically have a monopoly.
Yeah,
which isn't necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, it's not something you can answer, but I'm curious as to what this means for how it actually evolves year on year.
Yeah, I mean, what I don't know is whether the people who played 16 are like, oh, it's just the same. Why haven't they changed this? This was rubbish in the prior one, blah blah blah. I will say it seems a bit grindy, like I'm leveling up. It appears at a very slow rate, which I'm pretty sure is geared towards making me buy some of the coin stuff in there, which is kind of annoying. But I might be wrong. Like, maybe I'll get a big fat bonus for being drafted onto a team at the end of the year or whatever.
Or maybe you don't actually need your stats to be that high. You're just quite bad.
Well, I am quite bad, so it's currently an accurate portrayal.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Maybe, you know, someone who plays the NBA games would be flying through with your stats, but who knows?
It may be, maybe. I don't have it on the easiest possible. I have it on the second easiest possible difficulty, but seems reasonably doable. Some of the FIFA skills do translate, to be honest, in terms of just kind of marking your man tightly in defense and Looking for gaps, looking for space, or making sure your oar's moving, stuff like that.
I guess general positioning and strategy. Yeah. And so on.
All of that translates pretty smoothly. So.
Other one, a significantly smaller court.
Yes, indeed. And a lot more regular scoring.
Yes.
And even if you're bad, there's still a lot more regular scoring than football.
One of the worst defeats in football ever was, I think it was American Samoa versus Australia, and it was something like, what was it?
Yes, 32-0 like
32-0 something. Yeah, I was going to say 31. I think it was around that region anyway.
There is a really good documentary about that team. Like what happened to them afterwards, and then acquiring a new coach, and then playing some other matches, to some of the World Cup qualification matches. What is that called? I need to look it up.
Well, the only point I was going to make was, you know, that's one of the worst defeats ever in sort of professional football, whereas that's actually a remarkably low score for basketball.
Yes, it is. It's kind of surprising that one side got zero.
Yeah, but that is actually really hard to do in basketball.
Like, wow, you were really bad if you've never managed to get anywhere near. Yeah. And just, so the documentary is called Next Goal Wins. It's very good. And it's got quite a nice redemption story for the goalkeeper who, like, conceded those 32 goals and was the butt of many jokes for a long time.
Well, I was going to say, next goal wins would be in a nice situation to be in if you were 32-0 down.
Yeah. I mean, nothing to lose, really.
Yeah.
That's a good documentary. Even if you don't really like football, apparently it was 31-0 was the record breaking. So there we go. We were close. How long have we been talking for? Has it been about an hour and a half? Should we wrap this up?
Yeah, about an hour and a half. Yeah, there is inevitably loads of stuff I could talk about, but this is going on with one.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up for another week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Try not to be big racist PC users.
Yeah, that would just be terrible.
I'm serious, actually. Don't be racist PC users.
I'm serious as well. That would actually be terrible.
Yeah. Just don't do it. Just are you going to ask what we've got coming up?
Be excellent to one another.
Be excellent to one another. That's on your shirt right now.
Party on, dudes. Look, seriously, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure gives us life lessons we can all learn from.
It's pretty solid philosophy. It's pretty solid stuff. So what are you reviewing at least one thing that I know of?
Yes,
Tim?
I will be doing, for that matter, I've written 90% of a piece on Virginia, which is an extraordinarily weird game, which is out. I'm not even comfortable calling it a game. It's out tomorrow. Or probably
an experience.
Probably today when you listen to this. I'm kind of holding off on that review until I can find out sort of how much it costs, because that is going to have an impact. So that will probably be up shortly after launch. I've been dicking around with a game called Rogue Wizards, which is a bit of a roguelikey thing. I've got fairly mixed opinions on both of these. I believe that's embargoed until tomorrow as well, but I need to play that some more and write about it. Will be up later. There are also a couple of other things, but I don't think I can actually talk about them at the moment, so I won't.
Fair enough. I'll be doing a sort of PC tech review of NBA 2K17 and probably including some broader thoughts, or maybe doing a sort of separate piece somehow on that. I'm not sure. I'll be writing about it in some capacity anyway. It will unlikely to be a full review, just because I'm kind of not really comfortable in my knowledge and skills of the series to do that. But FIFA's out pretty soon, I would imagine. I'm trying to get code for that, so if I hopefully do, then I'll do stuff with that. I'm on sports duty at the moment, basically.
it's that time of year.
Some Deus Ex DLC out soon, I think. I don't know if we either of us get that by default because of the version of the game we have.
Don't know. I will throw out an email to Square Enix. When is that due? Is that next week?
I think it's 23rd, but it might be 27th.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Okay. There's also a Hitman next week.
I was going to say I can email Squeenix about that. It's just that I think EGX kicks off in a moment, so they're probably all going to be very busy.
Yeah, I'm also busy myself because my parents are visiting me, so I'm not actually doing much the next few days. But hopefully the gap between that'll fill the gap between FIFA's release nicely, hopefully. And I'm sure Paul will be writing some things too. I'm just going to take a guess and say it'll be about Paragon, but I don't know for sure.
It usually is. That's a fairly safe bet. I mean, he's managed to eke out an article about how to lose at Paragon now, so...
Yeah. That's almost as impressive as me eking out Warhammer stuff. We're getting quite good at this. Right. That is really it now. Thank you for listening to this. Goodbye.
Bye.
And silent. Under the dawn of that last great day.